It is Friday, February 1st, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Window Washing, offering both residential and commercial cleaning services, as well as power washing, gutter protection, and more. Information is available on the web at FayettevilleWindowWashing.com.
Ahead on Ozarks, all of the Harry Potter books and movies condensed. Antoinette talks to the creative force behind the show, Potted Potter. They'll be at Walton Arts Center later this month. Plus, the next step after more than 200 people met yesterday in Rogers to discuss making the region healthier.
Plus, Yuni Han, guest artist at tomorrow night's concert by the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra, sits down at the Mary Baker Rumsey Steinway Piano at KUAF to give us a preview of her performance of Rhapsody in Blue.
First, yesterday, the National Labor Relations Board announced a temporary settlement of a complaint filed by retail giant Walmart against the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, alleging unfair labor practices. Walmart filed the complaint with the National Labor Relations Board in November, alleging United Food and Commercial Workers Union organizers working as the Organized United for Respect at Walmart, or Our Walmart, were staging national protests using disgruntled Walmart employees to build union recognition. David Tovar is the vice president of communications for Walmart.
Many of the union's demonstrations and pickets used before Black Friday were illegal. The unfair labor practice charge against the union will also remain in place for several months as part of this settlement to hold the UFCW accountable should it violate the agreement during that time.
UFCW contends Our Walmart is an autonomous employee rights group struggling to raise awareness about the company's low wages, poor benefits, and retaliations against associates who speak out. Walmart filed its complaint, hoping to block a planned nationwide Black Friday boycott last November. But NLRB stayed a decision. UFCW expected 1,000 protests to take place at hundreds of stores last fall, when in fact only several thousand Walmart employees and supporters turned out across several dozen stores nationwide, including a gathering in Little Rock. But David Tovar says the temporary settlement will prevent other such protests.
As part of this agreement, the UFCW says that it has no intent enforcing or requiring Walmart to recognize or bargain with the UFCW or Our Walmart as the representatives of its employees. And it has agreed to stop all picketing and confrontational conduct at our stores and other company facilities for at least 60 days.
In a statement issued late yesterday, Walmart thanked the National Labor Relations Board for its decision, saying it hopes the agreement will bring an end to what it says are unlawful union tactics, which they say disrupt customers as well as store associates.
A bill in the Arkansas legislature that would enact more restrictions as to when a woman could get an abortion cleared the state Senate yesterday. The Arkansas Heartbeat Protection Act passed the Senate by a vote of 26-8. The bill would make it illegal for doctors to conduct an abortion once a fetal heartbeat can be detected. Republican Senator Jason Rapert of Conway introduced the bill. The bill will likely garner legal challenges if passed by the House, but Rapert says he is confident the bill could pass legal muster, citing the 1992 decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in the case of Casey versus Planned Parenthood.
In the Casey decision, it was stated clearly that a state has an interest in protecting a baby at viability. And so, as I've stated to you, viability now has been a moving target in this nation based upon medical evidence and medical technology. Therefore, I'm stating that it is very rational to say, knowing that there can never be a viable baby without a heartbeat, then we're stating when that heartbeat is present, there is life, and we shall afford protection to that life.
The next stop for the bill is in the House Committee on Public Health, Welfare, and Labor.
Bills that curb abortion rights and promote conservative ideology have become some of the hallmarks of the 89th General Assembly since Arkansas Republicans have gained control of both chambers in the state legislature. State Representative John Burris, a Republican from Harrison, is the chair of the House Public Health, Welfare, and Labor Committee. In an interview with Talk Business, Burris says bills that deal with reproductive rights and other contentious pieces of legislation are important issues that he says should be debated.
I mean, if we're not talking about the controversial stuff, what are we going to be talking about? The less important stuff. So I think it's absolutely the role of the legislature, especially the Public Health Committee. You've got 100 people in the House, 35 in the Senate, all have different passions and different views. I've been a guy that's really probably been more focused on the budget during my short time here, budget and taxes. And so that's a passion of mine, but you've got to wear many hats down here. And I think the social issues are still a pretty key component of that.
Representative Burris says there are legitimate concerns about a variety of social issues, and those discussions won't distract lawmakers from passing a budget, reviewing tax reform measures, and fulfilling other responsibilities.
As the legislature considers expanding Medicaid in Arkansas, an audit of the program will be released today. It was to come out in March, but some lawmakers have pushed for a preliminary report to be made public now. Roby Brock with our content partner Talk Business has more on what's expected.
I think this is going to be a very contentious report. I think it'll be very controversial, and I think that you will see probably some Republican legislators feel like it gives them a lot of ammunition to focus on the existing program and push off discussion of expansion. At the same time, I think you're going to see administration officials say this does not properly represent what's going on with the state's Medicaid program, and they're going to be very critical of the results and the findings. That's what we're seeing already in some of the crossfire exchange that's coming before the report even comes out.
The report includes data from a two-year period beginning in 2009.
The University of Arkansas has announced its mid-year fundraising total. Midway through the 2013 fiscal year, the university has raised nearly $61.8 million, a 15% increase over fundraising from the same time last year. The total amount includes outright gifts of cash, gifts in kind, planned gifts, and new pledges. And those gifts are slated to go toward academic and athletic purposes, such as scholarships, diversity initiatives, new construction, and renovation projects, the Razorback Foundation, and university libraries. The university says it plans to raise $107 million by the end of the fiscal year, June 30th.
The University of Arkansas in Fort Smith has posted enrollment numbers for the spring semester. As of the 11th day of classes, 6,589 students were enrolled at the college, with a full-time equivalent enrollment of 5,289. Those numbers represent a 2% decrease in overall enrollment and a less than 1% decrease in full-time equivalent enrollment over totals from spring 2011. Despite the slight enrollment decrease, the semester still marks the fourth highest spring enrollment figure in the college's history. In addition, first-time enrollments increased by 24%, transfer student enrollment increased by 23%, and international student enrollment increased by 11%.
The storms that brought tornadoes to parts of Washington and Crawford counties earlier this week also brought significant precipitation to the watersheds that feed Beaver Lake. Sean Harper is the operations manager for the Army Corps of Engineers at the lake.
Because the ground was pretty dry, a lot of this rainfall penetrated and soaked into the ground before it really started to run off a lot. But we did see that the War Eagle and the White River, I believe, came up significantly for a brief period. Those two main tributaries, along with other minor, lesser tributaries, were able to contribute some runoff. It did run off from these storms, and the lake rose pretty good, about a foot, I would think, roughly in that neighborhood. We would need several more of these types of events over the coming month or two, and even into the spring.
Although the rain only raised the lake level by about a foot, and the lake is still down by about 10 feet, he says that rains that raise the level incrementally are preferred to larger amounts of precipitation all at once.
However, there's no rain in the immediate forecast. Partly cloudy tonight with lows from 26 in northwest Arkansas to 30 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow with highs from 53 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 57 in the Arkansas River Valley. And mostly clear tomorrow night with lows from 27 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 31 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com, a website that is devoted to business, culture, politics, and more of the entire region. Happy Friday to you, sir.
Happy Friday. Those are two words that just go together.
They do. It's like peanut butter
happy
and jelly.
Yep.
It's a happy Friday for Tyson Foods. They've just this morning released some numbers that show they're off to a strong 2013.
Yes, it's been a series of happy Fridays, apparently. They just reported, as you said this morning, net quarterly profits of $168 million, and that's 48 cents a share, which is well ahead of what Wall Street was expecting, about 40 cents a share. So they beat those estimates. And they did it on revenue of about $8.4 billion, which was higher than the $8.3 billion in the previous year. So they're back on track. They've been on track for a while. This quarter, I think there are a lot of people watching this quarter just to make sure that some of the previous quarters weren't flukes or anything, but this is a real, it's a good sign for Tyson. They're stringing several good quarters together. Their chicken segment is kind of back in the limelight again in terms of returning profit and operating income. Beef segment even did well, considering just that the U.S. beef industry is just taking a beating, primarily because of drought conditions. I mean, just, you know, the beef herd is possibly at an all-time low. And their pork side of their business is doing well. But considering all that they're up against with export issues and the high cost of feed, the company's doing very well.
Now, it hasn't been such a good week when it comes to similar news for USA Truck.
No, it's not been a good 4 years for USA Truck, and this is troubling. They have had 4 years of losses, and the 2012 loss was $17.5 million. And as we noted in our story, it begs the question, how much longer can this company operate? And that's an important question in this area because they employ several hundred at their headquarters there in Van Buren. And it's a lot of the scuttlebutt here in the area about how do they keep going. But they lost a little over $10 million in 2011. They lost a little over $3 million in 2010, and they lost a little over $7 million in 2009. You know, pretty soon that adds up to some serious money.
Right.
And that's the concern. You know, they were able to get a new line of credit, essentially. It's a more technical term than that, but that's essentially what it was. They were able to get that last year. It gives them a little bit more breathing room to get this thing turned around. And it appears to be a combination of some internal miscues, and then they're just up against a national freight economy that just, it's still tough. The freight market out there is, they're having trouble with the driver retention, driver turnover issues. With the lack of demand in the freight industry, it's hard to get increased pricing to support their business model. So it's tough, and the problem is it just doesn't, the future, there's not that it's bleak, but there are not a lot of bright points for the future.
There were some new unemployment figures released this week. I'm going to ask you to help me out a little bit because these numbers showed unemployment rates, it showed workforce numbers, and numbers of employed. And those are all related, but all slightly a little bit different, too, right?
Yes. And this is hard, and we get some complaints on this, and it's how the federal government reports it, but the unemployment rate, for example, in December, it rose to 8.1%. Now, these are non-seasonally adjusted. These are as close to the real estimate as you can get of the current situation. In Fort Smith, that was up from 7.6% in November, but it was below the 8.5% last December. Of course, in Northwest Arkansas, still doing very well. The unemployment rate increased over just a little bit over November, but it's still below last December. Now, here's the thing, though. Unfortunately, the workforce size in the Fort Smith area continues to decline, and we're down to about 125,000. The record, and that's from a high of 139,000 just 4 years ago. So roughly 14,000 people out of the workforce in the past 4 years. And I think that paints a clear picture of what's going on in the Fort Smith area. December was the 48th consecutive month that the metro jobless rate has been at or above 7%. That's just tough. Those are tough numbers. And, as I get questions all the time, it begs the question, what's the region do to turn around? And if somebody's got the answer, I hope they can call in and let you know.
Finally, some kudos to Jamie Smith, reporter for thecitywire.com, who had a very interesting article. It's still on the front page of thecitywire.com about Toastmasters. This is a group that I think some people thought might have faded away, but that is not the case at all.
Right. Jamie approached me with this idea some time back, and I thought maybe she'd been drinking and we need to drug test her, but no, she's right on board. And, I know I'm probably not, this is not going to be popular. When she said Toastmasters, I just had this picture of a lot of elderly people sitting around talking about like what it was like during the Depression. I mean, and I know that's not what it is, but there are nine clubs in Northwest Arkansas, and four of those were chartered last year. Of the nine, four are just for Sam's and Walmart, Sam's Club and Walmart employees. And it's obviously a way to teach them how to be more comfortable in public, better present their case. It helps with sales pitches and that type of thing. And it makes sense. I mean, when you stop and think about it, it makes sense. And so it's a growing group of folks. I suspect that nine won't be the final tally. I suspect there'll be more groups, Toastmaster clubs, organizing in the area.
Okay, finally, tomorrow, Groundhog Day. Do you have a prediction? Shadow or no shadow?
In Arkansas, I think we'll get both within 15 minutes.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Which will mean 6 more weeks of we don't know what's next.
Right, exactly. That's what that means.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and more for the entire region. Thank you, Michael.
All right, talk to you later.
Hello, this is Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday nights beginning at 10 p.m. This Friday on the show, I will feature some great Memphis piano players, including Donald Brown and Harold Mayburn. We'll also hear from Rahsaan Roland Kirk and guitarist Kevin Eubanks, a brand new recording just released from Wayne Shorter's quartet. This and much more. That's Friday Shades of Jazz at 10 p.m.
This is Ozarks at Large. Yesterday, the John Q. Hammond Center was busy. Close to 200 participants gathered there to begin a serious discussion about making Northwest Arkansas healthier, emphasizing better nutrition, more exercise, and better life opportunities for everyone in the region. The Energize NWA Summit was sponsored by the Endeavor Foundation and included the announcement that $400,000 in grant money will be available for local cities and entities to use to create healthy initiatives. The grant possibilities are made possible with the help from the Convergence Partnership, a national coalition of funders. Aaron Hagar is a senior associate at PolicyLink and represented the partnership at yesterday's summit. This morning, she came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to discuss what's next following yesterday's meeting.
It was really exciting. I was telling the foundation team yesterday that it was exciting to see them just ready to hit the deck running. We awarded these grants officially in December, but that's the holidays. A lot of people are still trying to get their things closed from the year before, and very few of the grantees were really already out of the gates like this. And so to also have 200 people there, like you were saying, when I first talked to them, they were hoping for maybe 150, 160. Then when we heard 200, that was, like you said, it was knocked it out of the park.
Obviously, a lot of momentum built yesterday. Can that momentum be sustained?
Absolutely. I think so. You know, this is not a sprint. This is going to be a long, patient journey. And certainly there will be ebbs and flows of momentum and engagement and excitement. But I think that across the country, there is a movement that's being built and momentum that's growing. And Northwest Arkansas is a part of that.
You mentioned the grantees. There were 13 grantees, is
yeah.
that correct? Northwest Arkansas and Endeavor Foundation, one of them. The others scattered across the country?
Yeah, they're scattered all over the country. We were very purposeful about the geographic distribution of the grantees. There are rural and urban funders, mostly local, but some regional, some working regionally, and of various sizes as far as the foundation operating budget and staff and those sorts of things also.
$400,000 to Endeavor, and Endeavor then will distribute them to other proposals and ideas?
Yep, they'll do some re-granting. So the Convergence Partnership awarded $170,000 to Endeavor, and Endeavor had to match that $2 to $1. And that's the case with all of these grantees. They had to match the money. The Convergence Partnership awarded $1.825 million through the Innovation Fund this year.
What sort of, I mean, we have to wait for the proposals and things. What sort of things do you and your colleagues imagine might be funded through this sort of activity?
Yeah, so there are three kind of overarching tenets of this initiative. One is that the work really focuses on advancing equity. Another piece is that it's moving policy and environmental change, not programmatic activities. And the third one is that they're building multi-sectoral, non-traditional partnerships. So maybe the health department and the transportation department are going to work together in ways they haven't before. So this is about healthy eating. It's about active living. But again, it's about changing the policies and environments that are making it difficult for people to be active and eat healthy, not about educating people, although, of course, that's important.
This is big picture stuff.
Exactly.
Let's go back to the first one, equity. It's important that this is that healthy initiatives can include everybody.
Absolutely. So, you know, what we've seen is that in low-income communities, in communities of color, those communities have been kind of left behind as the policies have been developed, as money has been invested. And so you're seeing that sectors of our society are really struggling. They're having really disparate health outcomes compared to more affluent parts of the community and oftentimes white parts of the community. And so what we want is to bring people all into a prosperous and productive economy and society. And so we're really focusing on decreasing disparities.
I talked to Jill Kaplan of the Endeavor Foundation earlier this week before the summit, and she said that she thought this area was uniquely poised, ready for this sort of thing. I know you were just here for a bit. Do you think that's the case?
I do. I have previously done work in Arkansas, so I knew a little bit about the landscape when I was coming here and when we were thinking about funding the foundation. But when I got here, I was totally surprised in a really excellent way in the number of people that are already engaged, in the excitement that's already happening, and in the players that are already involved. You know, there's a regional plan, there are mayors involved, there are major corporations, public-private partnerships. This is the type of work that takes people years to build these sorts of relationships and partnerships, and the fact that they're already in place here definitely poises this region for success.
Partnerships, a word we've heard a lot with this. Local partnerships, the Convergence Partnership. Is there a partnership behind Convergence as well?
Yeah, so the Convergence Partnership is made up of 8 of the nation's biggest funders. It includes Ascension Health, Kaiser Permanente, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the Kresge Foundation, the California Endowment, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Nemours, and the Rockefeller Foundation. And then they also receive strategic advice from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And then behind that, PolicyLink, the organization I work for, serves as the program director, and Prevention Institute, another advocacy and social justice organization in the Bay Area, works to provide support to the partnership. So this is, you know, a kind of a really big machine almost that's operating to try to move this work forward.
When you see the list annually of the least healthy states, the states that battle obesity the most, Arkansas is always in the top 10, bottom 10, however you want to phrase that. How can we, will there be ways that we can measure, and again, we're talking Northwest Arkansas, not the entire 75 counties, I realize, but is there a way a region can measure that it's becoming healthier?
Absolutely. Certainly there are national measures and local measures of things like body mass index that can be done, and Arkansas is actually one of the leading states as a whole for measuring school children's body mass index in a rigorous manner. But I think another way is to really look at the process measures and network measures. These are things that look at how cohesive the community is as a whole, who's involved in the decision making and the planning. And from our perspective, the more people you're bringing into this mix, the more sustainable something will be and the greater prosperity you will have as a region.
And it's possible in these very political times to do these things without running into, political roadblocks?
Well, I think you always have to be prepared to be able to have a conversation on different levels. Different arguments are more persuasive depending on your political affiliations. And you have to be really savvy in the way that you understand the work that you're trying to do. And so one example is if you're building a grocery store, or you're bringing healthy food retail to a community through a farmer's market, for example. Of course, there's the argument about healthy food access and people's eating behaviors, but there's also a really strong economic argument for the impact that those dollars are going to have in the community. And so depending on who you're talking to, one of those stories will be more influential. And those are the kind of things that you have to be prepared for. You have to be as I said, savvy, you have to be flexible, you have to be persistent. These are the kind of traits that are important for moving policy.
So you will be staying in touch, you'll be monitoring.
Absolutely. We'll hopefully have a good relationship that's not overbearing but is helpful and providing resources to the foundation going forward.
Erin, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Erin Hager is a senior associate at PolicyLink and was part of yesterday's Energize Northwest Arkansas Summit in Rogers. She talked with Kyle earlier today inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. The Harry Potter phenomenon continued to grow. It was not uncommon to see scores of parents and their children lined up at a local bookstore waiting for the clock to strike midnight so they could get their hands on the latest book about the boy wizard. For the release of the sixth book, Olivier Award-nominated actors Daniel Clarkson and Jefferson Turner created a five-minute performance for guests at a London bookstore. The performance eventually grew into Potted Potter, the Unauthorized Harry Experience, a parody by Dan and Jeff. The show, which will be at Walton Arts Center February 16th and 17th, covers all seven books in 70 minutes. Earlier this week, I spoke on the phone with Jefferson about his initial reaction to the request to create a condensed version of Harry Potter.
I personally hadn't read any of the Harry Potter books at that stage. This was back in 2005, and Dan had. He was an absolutely huge Harry Potter fan, which was why he was asked to do the job in the first place, because it was a friend of his who knew how much of a fan he was and thought he'd love it and love the opportunity of getting his hands on the sixth book at the stroke of midnight. I was very lucky. I kind of came along for the ride. It was a one-day job back then. And so I read all the books as quickly as I could, so I could do the job properly, and I instantly fell in love with it as well. So, yeah, we were both delighted to be a part of the boy wizard's world, however small a part it might be.
So when did the decision, or why did you come to the decision to expand your short performance, one-day performance, into covering seven books in 70 minutes that you now tour across the world for?
Well, we actually left it alone for a long time. We did it as that one-off gig for the launch of the sixth book at midnight in the bookstore in 2005. And then we had other work, some TV work that we were doing in the UK. And about a year later, we wanted to take something to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in Scotland. As a comedy actor, that's something that you pretty much have to try and do. And we decided to revisit the Harry Potter idea as it had gone down so well at the bookstore. And we developed it into six books in 60 minutes, as there was only the six around back then. And we were amazed how much the audiences enjoyed it. So when the seventh book came out, it was only logical to expand it, give ourselves a bit of breathing space, make it seven books in 70 minutes. And that would have been 2007. And since then, it's gone from strength to strength.
And how did you come up with the title Potted Potter?
That was actually, there was a daytime talk show in the UK called Richard and Judy. They're a husband and wife, and it was very, very popular all through the 90s and the noughties. And it was Judy Finnegan who was the one who said it when we were on her show as part of the promotion back in 2005, and she called it a potted potter, and we thought that was very nice. So we asked her if we could use that, and she said absolutely. And that was it. We've stuck with the title ever since.
Now, is potted slang for something?
It's quite a traditional English word. It's not really used much anymore, but it does mean shortened or condensed. And it began with P, and it was only one letter different to Potter, and we thought it sounded very nice. So, yes, it's not used in everyday parlance, but people in Britain do know what it means. We've had a bit more trouble out here in the States. But once we explain it has absolutely nothing to do with illegal substances, people seem to be on board.
Now, while you're here in Fayetteville, you are here for 2 days and you'll be performing two shows each of those days. Is it not exhausting to do that? Because in my experience, the shows that I have seen that are condensed versions of something, condensed versions of Shakespeare or Greek mythology, things like that, the actors, there's only two of you, that play multiple characters, and there are lots of props, and it seems like it's exhausting on its own, let alone trying to do it twice in one day.
It is exhausting to do two show days, but we do try very hard to remind ourselves that we're not really doing a real job. Yeah, we're asked to go out on stage for about 80 minutes twice a day, and it's not like going and working down a coal mine or something like that. So, yes, it is exhausting, but, you know, we get through it. We are basically just two friends messing around on stage, and to be honest, we're just waiting until immigration realise that and kick us out. So while we can still mess around, we try and do it as often as we can.
And do you know how many props you have? Because I know oftentimes shows like this have hundreds of props.
Oh, that's a really good question. That's something we haven't been asked before. Offhand, no. I don't know. I play Harry most of the time. I have two props. I have glasses and a wand. So I'm fine. But I don't know. I think we must be coming up to 100 props in the whole show, I would have thought. Maybe more. It's poor old Dan who has to keep track of them all. But yeah, I'd guess at around 100.
And you have different costumes as well as you switch from character to character, I'm sure.
Of course. Our costumes put all other shows to shame. I mean, Les Mis, Phantom, Book of Mormon, none of that's any good. Lion King, our costumes are way better.
I'm sure. Well, something that maybe is better than some of your typical Broadway shows that you just mentioned is there's some audience participation, I understand. There's a Quidditch game?
There is. We believe we are the only place in the world where you can just turn up and take part in a game of Quidditch. And that, I mean, if you thought the costume sounded good, the game of Quidditch is amazing. There's children flying around all through the theatre. There's quaffles. There's blood just going absolutely everywhere. And it is a visual sight to behold. And if you believe that, you'll believe anything. It's, to be honest, when we put that in the show, we thought it would be, because we really wanted to create a show for all ages. We wanted something that kids would love, but also that adults wouldn't be bored with. You know, we wanted it to be for the adults as well. And so we thought we'd put that in about halfway through the show in case the kids are getting a bit restless. We know that it's always a good point in the show to get some participation in for the kids, but we were so wrong. It's not the kids, it's the men. The men absolutely love Quidditch. They suddenly think it's, I don't know, the Super Bowl or something like that, and it's the last minute and it's all down to them. And we've seen a lot of children look very embarrassed at their fathers as they get a little bit overexcited in the game of Quidditch. So it's a place to come and to try and live out your sporting dreams and hopefully fail, because that's a lot funnier for everyone.
So the Quidditch seems to be something that a lot of the audience members seem to enjoy. But what is it about the show that you enjoy so much? You've continued to do this and you expanded it from your, you know, 5-minute initial performance to a 60-minute to now a 70-minute.
There's a couple of things I enjoy a lot about it. Firstly is that the show is never the same twice. We've been doing it for 7 years on and off. We've probably done it about 1,300 times now. If it was the same show every night, we just wouldn't be able to do it anymore. It would be stale. The audience would be able to tell that we weren't enjoying it anymore. But we mix it up because it's so fast, because Dan plays so many characters and because I've got so many lines, things go wrong. We love it when things go wrong. It makes it a lot more fun for us, a lot more fun for the audience. And the other thing is the passion that people have about Harry Potter and everything for J.K. Rowling. It's incredible. I've never known it with anything else. If we dare get a fact wrong in the show, which hasn't happened for a long time, if we say something wrong, or back in the early days, if we haven't fact-checked and we got it a bit wrong, people, grown-up people, have no shame in shouting out to correct us, because how dare we get something wrong to do with Harry Potter? So I do like that sort of level of fanaticism. You know, Dan and I are both geeks, really, at heart. And we like to see that much passion in the audience as well. So, and people come dressed up, and I think some of them really do believe they're wizards. So that's always fun to see as well.
Jefferson Turner is co-writer and a performer in the two-man show Potted Potter, The Unauthorized Harry Experience, a parody by Dan and Jeff. The duo will perform two shows on February 16th and on February 17th at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. More information is available at waltonartscenter.org.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, I have new music from Anna Bergendahl and Mark Robinson. Also, some Candy Cane, Sue Foley, Julian Foth, George Harmonica Smith, Marquise Knox, Chuck Lavelle, and more. Join the fun. That's Friday night at 9 o'clock, the Generic Blues Show on KUAF. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Not with us.
In
the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Martin Brown. She is the editor, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
She is homesick, unfortunately.
The flu caught up with her. So we're going to prove that her presence is a needed thing, but we're going to try to fill in however feebly we can.
We're going to attempt to do this.
To tell you what's happening this weekend.
We're going to find out what's up, actually, this weekend.
Yes, because what's up is what do you call that?
The entertainment section.
Yes.
Comes out every Friday.
Not periodical. What's this?
Tabloid.
Tabloid.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's in the newspaper every Friday.
Every Friday, giving you all the information of all the entertainment happening in the region.
So here are some highlights.
So we're going to do some highlights.
As
we flip through,
yes.
What's up?
The Shiloh Museum is going to have an exhibit of things that are from a former museum.
Yes.
The University of Arkansas Museum. It still exists as a collection.
Right.
If it doesn't have a permanent place.
Exactly. The stuff is in storage, for lack of a better word.
Yes.
It's just not on display like a regular museum. But it's all the artifacts and things that they collected all over the years is still there.
Right. And so they're going to have an exhibit that will open.
It opens Monday. Mm-hmm. And it's up through the year, and the hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale. The cost is free. There will be a sandwich-in program mm-hmm. called Forgotten But Not Gone. It'll include a panel discussion on the history of the University of Arkansas Museum by current and former museum curators. That's at noon on February 20th at Shiloh.
Okay.
Admission is free to that as well.
What else we got?
What else do we have?
I know that the University of Arkansas Library is beginning a series of Fellini films, Fellini in February.
Uh-huh.
The first one will be 6 o'clock Tuesday at the library. It'll be every Tuesday through February 26th.
Mm-hmm.
Among the films included in the Fellini in February, 8 and a Half.
I don't know this one.
It's a classic.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. It's perhaps the most famous film I've never seen. I believe this is the one that includes that iconic image of death playing chess.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, Tuesday night at 6 begins Fellini in February at the University of Arkansas Library.
Okay. Another highlight, percussion performance by Benjamin Finley of East Central University. That's at 7:30 Monday night at Breedlove Auditorium at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. And as always, our favorite word.
It's free.
It is free.
Trampled Underfoot is playing tonight at George's.
They are. The Randy Rogers Band plays at 10, and Trampled Underfoot is from 6 to 8, and that's at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. Tomorrow night, a show I'm kind of excited about. The Paper Hearts are reuniting.
This will be the first time you've seen them.
It'll be the first time I've seen
yes.
them, but I'm very excited. I'm going with some people who remember them from the original incarnation
yes.
when they were here before.
It's all of the original members together.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited. I didn't realize that I know the people individually, and I didn't realize that they were in a band back in the day. So I'm pretty excited about that. That's at 9 o'clock at Rogue Pizza in Fayetteville. I believe admission is $5.
Yes.
I think Kentucky Waterfalls is opening.
They are.
So there's that. And Sunday.
Yes.
If you're looking for some music on Sunday, Sarah Hughes, local favorite, is going to be playing from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Common Grounds in Fayetteville.
So you can see Sarah Hughes, but not miss a second of the Super Bowl.
Time does the Super Bowl start?
It's about a 5:30 kickoff.
Oh, so yeah.
Yeah. Tomorrow afternoon at the Fayetteville Public Library,
mm-hmm.
Stephen Karam, who is the author of Sons of the Prophet,
mm-hmm.
will be at the library to talk about his script. It's, of course, the next production in the Theater Squared season.
And you'll be there?
I will, moderating that conversation.
Also tomorrow at the library, it's Take Your Child to the Library Day. Yes, from 10:30 a.m. to noon. So you can bring your child from 10:30 to noon, grab some lunch, come back for the panel discussion.
Right, which is at 3.
Which is at 3. So perfect. You can do all of that. Lots of things going on tomorrow. Birds and Breakfast, the University of Arkansas, will be catching, banding, measuring, and recording data on birds, then releasing them, of course, back into the wild for Saturdays this month. It starts this week from 9 to 11 a.m. at Hobbs State Park in Rogers, and that is free.
Is there breakfast food available? It's called Birds and Breakfast?
I don't know.
Or are they just letting you know it's in the morning?
I'm not sure. Okay. If you want more information, you can call 789-5000.
Mm-hmm.
Also, tomorrow morning, a tribute to Black American composers. It's a panel discussion at 10 a.m. at Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on the U of A campus in Fayetteville. Also free. More information for that at 265-32. And this sounds interesting to me. On Sunday, History of Quilting in America with Lillian McConnell. She has a lecture at 3, and the exhibit is up through February 22nd at the Center for Art and Education in Van Buren.
Sounds like a good time.
Also free.
All right. Well, we miss Becca.
We do miss Becca.
We got through, but there's some ideas for this week. And Becca, rest, fluids.
And we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
The Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra will present a very American concert tomorrow night at the Air and Art Center in Bentonville. At the heart of the program is George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. Yuni Han, guest artist, will be at the piano for the performance. Yesterday, she came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk about returning to Arkansas. She won the Fulbright Concerto competition in 2011, and here's more with Kyle.
Welcome back to Northwest Arkansas.
Oh, thank you.
You were here in 2011, right?
Right.
That was
and last year as well.
And last year as well.
Right.
When you were here in 2011, it was part of the Fulbright piano competition.
Right.
Which you took first place.
Yes.
And the Audience Award.
Yes.
What do you remember from that competition?
I stayed with very, very nice host. And he lived alone, and he didn't mind. I practiced, you know, after midnight, Prokofiev, Shostakovich.
You would practice after midnight?
Yes.
Is that your preferred time, or was that just how the schedule allowed?
No, you know, nobody was at the house, and he had a beautiful piano. And I just enjoyed, because I live in New York. And after 8 p.m., I cannot practice.
Because of neighbors?
Yes, yes. And I live in a tiny apartment. And
so
I took advantage.
So that must have been liberating.
Yes, yes, it was.
In your New York apartment, you do have a piano.
I do. Well, you know, it's a very, very tiny apartment. I have a piano, grand piano, a bed, and a desk. So in home, you know, I only have three options: sleep, practice, or study.
I'm sure it's much more entertaining than you just made it sound.
Right. Well, I love being, you know, anywhere, Arkansas or Mississippi or those states has, you know, large land and beautiful homes, large homes that, well, I can cook and I don't have to smell for the same food, you know, for 3 days. If I cook in my apartment, I have to smell for that for 3-4 days.
What's your specialty? What do you like to cook?
Oh, Southern food.
Really?
Yes.
Now, when you first came to the United States, you came to Mississippi, correct?
No, I came to New York, but I have host family in Mississippi. That how we met was that I was playing with Mississippi Symphony, and they put me with very nice host family. And, well, my host mom has three sons, and she always wanted to have a daughter. So we clicked instantly. And we both love cooking. Only difference is that I try to steam everything, and she tries to fry everything and convince me fry is more healthier.
So you took to cooking Southern food?
Yes, yes, yes. We enjoy it very much. And well, they call me Korean daughter, and their sons call me Korean sister. Yes.
Okra, can you?
Fried okra?
Yeah.
Oh, I like it, too.
Okay, all right. You began playing the piano at a very young age, correct?
Yes.
I think you were in competitions by the time you were in your early teens?
Yes, yes. But, you know, I came from Korea, and most kids start when they're 3. Wow. We have a tiger moms.
I mean, I know that's the stereotype. That's
yeah.
What is... Being in competitions at that young age, is it nerve-wracking, or is it just something you do?
Well, you do what your mom says so.
Yeah. But you must, I mean, for many young people, wherever they are in the world, if their mom or dad wants them to do something that much, they kind of rebel and may grow not to like doing it.
Ooh, not in Asia.
Oh, okay. That's not an option. But you love the piano.
I did. I did. I started when I was 3, and we had a piano, and both my mom and dad at work So I had, you know, piano and me at home. And it was my toy, you know, like it has 88 keys and make different sound. So I get, you know, interested naturally.
You have played throughout Asia, throughout Europe, throughout North America. You've played in South America, Brazil. You've played at Alice Tully Hall. You've played at the Lincoln Center. It's been an amazing career so far, hasn't it?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And now in Arkansas.
And now again in Arkansas. Is it true, Stephen Bias, the conductor from the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra, told me that this will be your public debut of Rhapsody in Blue. Is that true?
Yes. I've actually played once in Fort Smith with Fort Smith Symphony. But yes, it's only my second time.
Second time.
I am excited and also afraid of it. Because, yes, afraid.
Well, it's an unusual work, right? I mean,
It is. It's, you know, I would say it's the most beloved and popular American music. Maybe most, you know, most famous piece of 20th century American music history. Well, because it's so well known, I am afraid that people will sing along at the concert. No.
Now, as you and I talk on Thursday morning, Stephen Bias still hasn't arrived in from Florida. So when is the first rehearsal that you and the Arkansas Philharmonic and Stephen will all be together?
That'll be tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night?
Yes, and then we play concert day after.
So 24 hours beforehand.
That's right.
But that's not unusual, is it, for a traveling artist?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, there's airplane delays, and I don't get to rehearse with orchestra and go on stage, just meeting conductor beforehand and go on stage. Or sometimes, you know, anything could happen sometimes. Your dress doesn't arrive. You lose your luggage, and you have to go with your jeans and flat shoes and no makeup.
Well, you know, if there are certain musicians, cellists, violinists, who travel with their instrument, so they know their instrument very well.
Right.
Obviously, you can't take your grand piano on the plane. Is that a disadvantage? Because you're always playing a different instrument, whether it be Tupelo, London,
right,
or Bentonville?
That's true. Well, yes, this advantage, part of it, because you don't try. It's not your own instrument that you're used to. And, well, advantage is that you don't have to worry about losing your instrument.
Well, that's true. No one's going to damage it.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, would you, we have, now you're a Steinway artist.
Yes, I am.
And we have a Steinway here, the Mary Baker Rumsey piano. Would you mind playing something?
Maybe I play, well, let's see, what should I play?
I'm not going to tell you what, you play whatever you'd like.
Okay. Well, I could play a tune from Gershwin Rhapsody in Blue or something else. Let's see. Well, it's early morning and I haven't warmed up. But.
And take your time.
But I've been playing the piano the last 20 years, so I guess I could do that.
Right. Right. Well, take your time and you can and play whatever you'd like.
Okay. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any place that you haven't played yet that you would like to play?
I don't know. Well, I have played in Korea, but I'd like to play there again. Yes, and invite all my family, and that would be nice.
And if you could have one, because you've got a very small apartment and you like to cook, so I imagine you can't have a lot of cooking utensils in this small apartment, especially if you're sharing it with a bed.
Oh,
and a grand
I do.
Piano. You do?
I keep it under my bed.
I guess real estate in New York makes you be very creative, doesn't it?
Right. And I put it under my piano. It makes a good soundproof system.
So there are spatulas under the grand stand?
That's right.
That's great. The concert is 7:30.
Right.
Saturday night. And then you will, you've played the Rhapsody once in Fort Smith. You'll play it in Bentonville Saturday night. And then you're also scheduled to do it in Tupelo.
That's right.
Later
with
in the
Stephen
spring.
Baez. Yeah. Yeah, same conductor. And, well, as I said, I have my host family, a big host family. They probably have 30 to 50 family members.
Oh, wow.
They are going to rent a bus from Mississippi Jackson and come to Tupelo.
Wow. That will be a sold-out concert.
Yes.
And people can find out more about you and hear some of you playing Beethoven at your website as well, right?
That's right. Yes.
Which is just...
Yes, Beethoven Sonata.
And unihon.com.
That's right.
Thank you so much for coming back to Northwest Arkansas.
Thank you.
And next time you come back to play, you're invited to come back.
Thank you so much.
Unihon is the guest artist for tomorrow night's Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra concert at Arend Art Center in Bentonville. You can learn more at arkansasphilharmonic.org.
Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring architects and engineers in the February 4th edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition is available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can also register for the daily business e-news.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Rock House.
Rock House.
Uh-huh.
Near Huntsville?
It's north of there, yep. In Madison County, but like really close to the Carroll County line as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right.
Good job.
Shout out to all of our friends in Rock House.
Yes.
Super Bowl is Sunday evening.
It is Sunday evening.
49ers, Ravens.
Uh-huh.
You know what? Before we do that, I need to answer yesterday's question.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because I promised three listeners four Malco movie passes each.
Okay.
The question in, because 30 Rock had its last episode on television last night, mm-hmm. and it's about Liz Lemon, who for most of the show was single and working in television, reminded me of Mary Richards, the Mary Tyler Moore character on the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Uh-huh.
The question was, where did the Mary Tyler Moore Show take place? What city?
Minneapolis.
Minneapolis, St. Paul, indeed. We set a record for most unanimously correct answers. We've had more people answer before. We've had more, and we've had people get it all right before, but this time 29 of you.
Wow.
All knew Minneapolis. So
three winners.
Three winners, and they are Kaya Rogers, Charles Kazani, and Marlene Craig. I'll email you folks and get your addresses so we can send you the passes.
Congratulations.
Now, Super Bowl.
Super Bowl.
Who's
yes. going to
win?
I have no idea. I like sports, but I don't pay a ton of attention to football. I will watch the Super Bowl, but mostly I'm watching for
the commercials.
The commercials, yes.
I think there was a study this year that said more people are actually watching the commercials than the game this year, that more people anticipate.
It's possible.
That.
You?
I'll watch both.
I mean, no. Oh. Do you have a team that you're rooting for, or do you care?
I don't really care. I have more friends that are Niners fans and Ravens fans, so I'll be with them.
I don't really know. So I think if everybody's on one side, I'll just pick the other just for funsies. So we'll find out.
Okay.
It's got to be entertaining. It's a competition.
Yes. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellum.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Have a great weekend.